Welcome to Stories from Palestine podcast. This week has been an extraordinary week. I recorded an episode last Monday with Elias Abu Zulouf about olive wood industry in Palestine, but on Tuesday I already knew that I cannot publish an episode about olive wood under the current circumstances. I've been posting updates on the situation in Palestine on social media in the last week, and if you're not yet following the Facebook page and the Instagram, then you can find the link in the show notes. Thank you everybody who's been asking about my family. We are doing well, but there is a lot of things are going on in Palestine right now. So for this week's podcast episode, I made a compilation of messages that I received from friends around Palestine. I've asked them to give an update and some context about what's happening around the country. The recordings are from Friday, the 14th of May, and I know that the situation changes very rapidly. So when you hear this podcast, for sure, things will already be different. I will keep updating you through social media posts. You will hear some familiar voices if you've listened to previous episodes, and there are some new voices. I will introduce each one of them, and then you can listen to their recordings, of which I made a compilation. We start with Izzeddin Bukhari. He is the founder of Sacred Cuisine. He talked to us about Sufism and about greens in Palestine in previous episodes, and he lives in the old city of Jerusalem.
What happened in Jerusalem recently, it's been many steps which escalate the situation to what it is today. But, you know, the Sheikh Jarrah struggle have been going on for some time, not just started. It's been going on and on for a long time. But the situation of Jerusalem and the old city in Ramadan, since in the beginning of Ramadan, the Israeli military and police, they tried to block the Palestinian from hanging out in Damascus Gate area. And it is like the main spot for Palestinian from Jerusalem, Old City, and also the people who come to the mosque, even after they finish the mosque and the prayer. It's like a hanging out area. So the police and the Israeli military, they block it by putting barriers. And this is really was a move to kind of upset, you know, the Palestinian. So the old city of Jerusalem, and everybody was coming to Jerusalem, you know, they couldn't take it. And there was many standing to our right to hang in Damascus Gate and make sure that they're not trying to make the Jerusalem old city for us as a Israeli vibe dominated and restricted. So this is took on for a few days till they were able to take the barriers out. The Israeli military, they decided to take it down because situation were getting very escalated. But also, you have the right-wing movement, Israeli settlers who wanted to come to Jerusalem, Damascus Gate, trying to create the friction and, you know, to upset the Palestinian, especially this right-wing movement. It's very extreme. They chanting, normally chant is like death to Arabs. So it was like we felt it's like an attack on the old city. Everybody stood up in Jerusalem and old city, and there were many clashes. But what really was fueling to the situation and what took it is to another level is when you have the Israeli military forces invading Al-Aqsa Mosque while people are praying and evicting everybody from Al-Aqsa and Dome of the Rock and all the compound of Al-Aqsa viciously while sounding grenades being thrown in a crazy amount, which is, I remember it was like before 7 o'clock to like 1 a.m., there's not even 1 second you don't hear at least a few sounding grenades. So this is, was like a move to really, the Israeli military, they trying to let us know, like, no, we control Al-Aqsa and we control the mosque. That's what really raised a lot of anger for the Palestinian all over Palestine and even globally. Because, you know, to go to a house of God where people are praying and to evict them that viciously, there is no other translation than that you are trying to escalate the situation and you are showing off with your power and domination. And no matter, you know, we as a Palestinian week, we still have our pride and we still care about Al-Aqsa, especially in the holy place. So this move cannot be accepted. This is what took the situation to another level, where many cities in Palestine start to resist, and the settlers, with the help and support of Israeli military, they were attacking civilians and Palestinians. I was just seeing a video today how Israeli soldiers are stopping the cars and checking who in it. And when they are Palestinian, you know, they start to just, you know, shoot, not at them, but scamming them, hitting the car with their legs and foot, you know. I feel like the vibe of the Israeli occupation and military for this Ramadan was very provoking. And the whole idea is to provoke the spirit of Palestinian. And to be honest with you, this is like one of the Ramadan which didn't feel like Ramadan at all. And now it's Eid and does not feel Eid at all. Because totally the spirit was like molested by this domination and occupation force and behavior. It's really ironically, with all what's going on and with so many people losing their life, their eyes, clashes, people going to jail for the first time, you can see all over Palestine, there is very strong spirit. And we are standing tall in front of this occupation, because I feel it's these things have been going on and on and on. You know, every Ramadan we have problems. Every Ramadan there is restriction. Every Ramadan they're trying to not allowing the people to go to Al-Aqsa. Even this year, they were not allowing people from who come in from Nazareth and from the 48 to come to Al-Aqsa. They will block the road so they don't allow them to come to the mosque. And what happened, people of Jerusalem went to Mudain area and they begged people who are coming in buses, like thousands of people in their private car. So like this spirit, which is happening right now among Palestinians, no matter where you are, 48, West Bank, Jerusalem, there is a big unity and we standing close with each other. And all our hearts is with Gaza, because we know as a Palestinian, Gaza is the place where it's facing the most brutality. And it's not like a police and sounding grenades. It's F-16 and F-35 and missiles. And Jerusalem is really sad. The whole city is like really devastated. And we can see in people's face how our hearts is with Gaza. And we are really worried, because we know how this occupation is vicious, ugly, does not care about the humanity, and how it behaves almost every time they attack Gaza. I really hope situation will be much quieter. I really hope, you know, the message and what's happening on, especially in Gaza, also in Sheikh Jarrah, in Al-Aqsa, this news can reach more people and people get more idea about what's going on. And if there is confusion from certain people, they are not really understanding what's happening. And they are confused between what the media is saying, because mainly it is sabotage the Palestinian story. It is very simple to look at numbers, and it's very simple to look how many Palestinians are dying, how many Israelis are dying, how Israel is the most advanced military in the world with all the technology and ability, and able to control Palestine 100% from borders to resources. And where is the Palestinian? They don't have who defend them. In Gaza, there is Hamas, but in the West Bank and Jerusalem, we don't have any police or force that's protect us. We have by the name the BLO, and we have the BA leadership, but the BA leadership does not represent us as a Palestinian, does not stand against Israel. It's the opposite, actually. It's a side that's work with the Israeli police and military to give them people who are wanted and not willing to support and protect Palestinian citizens. So we are left over here under the police and the military protection, which is they will go and protect the settler to attack you if they don't attack you themselves. And most of the injuries that's happening recently in Al-Aqsa and in Jerusalem, it was eyes. With these rubber bullets, they are taking people's eyes, and you have some circumstances where one person, he lost his two eyes, which means he was shot by two bullets. And usually these two soldiers, they will choose one person and they will try to take both of his eyes. So this is show the viciously and the techniques that the Israeli military used to just let us know that they are the one in power and they are one who are controlling our destiny and domination. And we as Palestinian, without anything, without any weapon or police that's to protect us, we let them know is like we still stand for who we are because we are Palestinian. We were born here and we from here and we will still here. This is the news from Jerusalem. Thank you all for tuning in. God bless. Assalamu alaikum. Azzedine from Jerusalem Old City.
I've asked Mazen Kumsiye, who was my professor last year for the Flora and Fauna course, who is a scientist, an author, an activist, and the founder of the Palestine Museum of Natural History, that we visited in the first episode of this podcast season, to give us some more historical context and tell us a bit about the current situation in the West Bank, which I already have to update with the sad news of 11 Palestinians that were killed on Friday, 14th of May.
The situation in Palestine, of course, is a colonial settler situation, and there has been, in the past few decades, ethnic cleansing that is ongoing, so that 7.5 million Palestinians are refugees or displaced people out of a total population of 13 million. The remaining Palestinians here are treated as subhuman subjects to Israeli Jewish state apartheid laws. And this is the cause of the problem. It is not an issue of violence. Violence is a symptom of the problem. And colonialists, of course, use violence. They have to use violence. You cannot come to somebody's home and land and take it nicely. So violence is intrinsic to colonialism. And of course, there is some resistance from the local people, most of it nonviolent resistance, but some of it may be armed resistance, which is recognized as legitimate by international law. Basically, the situation here is not very complicated. It's a simple settler colonial situation with the ramifications seen in other settler colonial situations like in North America when the Spaniards and the British came, or South Africa under apartheid or other situations. The situation in the West Bank has been similar to other parts of Palestine, 1948 areas, Jerusalem and Gaza, which is rejection of Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem and of desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and prevention of people, Christian and Muslim, from getting to their holy sites in Israel's attempt to make Jerusalem a Jewish city when it was multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-religious. The only difference, I would say, is the West Bank, we have the Palestinian Authority, and which suppresses protests in favor of Israel because of the Oslo Accords that tied its hands and that made it subservient to the Israeli occupation. There is some protests even this Friday, which is the 14th of May. The protests are planned around the West Bank, and last few nights there has been many protests from Nablus to Ramallah to Jenin to Hebron to Bethlehem. Here in Bethlehem where we are, I mean, I am in an area very close, about less than a kilometer from the place where there is demonstrations, and we get tear gas drifting even all the way down to the Museum of Natural History. So it's very tough here. The situation in the West Bank is like other places, but certainly not as much as what's happening in Gaza or inside Palestinian areas inside the Green Line, where there's literally pogroms happening against the Palestinians in there, with rampaging colonial settler racists attacking Palestinians, dragging them out of their cars and beating them. In Gaza, the situation is even much worse, as Israel is using its vast U.S.-supplied military power and U.S. Funds to basically bomb civilian neighborhoods resulting in having hundreds of people becoming homeless and killing many families, sometimes parents with their children. In one case, with four children and their father. This is horrific what's happening in the eyesight of the world and the silence of the world governments. People of the world have mobilized. There are demonstrations in hundreds of cities and communities around the world. What we see happening here has significant ramifications for the future of everybody, the future of the Israeli government, the future of the rogue Palestinian authority in Ramallah, created to serve the Israeli interests, the future of decency in the world, the future of hypocritical governments that support oppression and support racism in the countries around the world. Palestine has become the Achilles heel for much of the hypocritical governments around the world. And so we are hopeful that this will be a turning point, that this will bring governments to align with human rights and with international law instead of aligning with money interests. Israel has thought that having money interests and U.S. on its side, basically funding it and also using its veto power at the U.N. to prevent international law from being implemented here. Israel thought all of these things, and the normalization with the Arab world, of course, as governments, is going to give it impunity from its persistent violations of international law and human rights. The Palestinian uprising that is now ongoing is resetting the course, and I think is a good thing to finally show that you cannot have a normal, so-called normal apartheid state. Apartheid should be rejected, will be rejected. You cannot have normalization of such a system. The Palestinian Authority is becoming also a big loser in this because that they have failed to step up to the plate, basically, and stand with their people. And they still are tying their own hands and the hands of their people with these Oslo Accords that they signed, which were treacherous, basically, and people should be held accountable for signing them, that give up people's rights, like the rights of refugees to return, or sovereignty, or self-determination. I am optimistic. But at the same time, I think the darkness is most before the dawn. We will face much more challenges in the next few months, hopefully before the dawn comes.
I talked to Mohammed. He's one of my fellow students in the tour guide program. He lives in a small village called Koa, which is close to Bethlehem. The road that goes through the middle of his village is used by settlers who are moving in the Gush Etzion settlement block. This is an area in the heart of the West Bank with many bigger and smaller settlements that were built against international law on Palestinian property.
Hello, Crystal. Eid Mubarak. I wish you have a wonderful Ramadan. What I want to say that is this what happened in these days in the territories in 1948 and in West Bank, in the villages and the cities, that it remind us of before 1948, before Nakba war, where the Zionist gangs used to terrify people, farmers, simple people, to leave their houses. And this is going on again. We are terrifying people. You have seen in Alid, Haifa, how they enter the houses of the Palestinian people because they want to terrify them. They want them to leave this country. They will never rest unless they only in this country settle. So what is going on all day? We can see in my village to go Israeli soldiers going on all day on the main street. I live on the main street, 60th street, and they just waiting for some people. They are invoking people to throw stones on them. They just come in our Eid and keep going on, walking on the street, just to remind people, we are here. You are under occupation. That's what they do. They want to tell us we are stronger than you and we are ready to kill you and to replace you. So tonight in my village, people, as Palestinian people, we refuse to be under occupation. We refuse to put our heads down. So what happened is, as normal procedure, some people throw stones on the military jeeps on the 60 road. The soldiers respond by shooting bullets around on the houses, along the street, along the road, to find people, sick people, sleeping people, entering their houses, start searching for the people who throw the stones, just to deliver a message. They are an occupation.
Few weeks ago, you could hear Rami Sayeh. He's a Palestinian history teacher and a tour guide from Jaffa. And we recorded two episodes with him about the history of Jaffa. This is what he told me about what happened in Jaffa last week, as the police was very violent against protesters and Israeli settlers are attacking Palestinians in their homes in Jaffa.
What happened in Jaffa this week? On Monday, there was a very big demonstration, and after the demonstration, they started to walk on the main street and they entered the Ajami neighborhood. And when they entered again to Yafet Street, the main street, the police started attacking the protesters in order to finish the demonstration. Next day, the demonstration was smaller because most of them went to Lod, to the funeral on Tuesday. But the demonstration in Jaffa was good. And when they finished it, some of the kids started to run inside the street and the police started attacking them. On Wednesday, we tried to make a demonstration. The number was decreased. And a few minutes later, the special police forces came, brutally started to threat the whole protesters. He told them, if you're not evacuating the street, they were even standing on the side of the street, not on the street itself. So if you won't evacuate it, we will arrest you. So he started threatening the demonstrators. That's why there was no demo. Yesterday, Thursday, there was no standing, I guess, because of this brutality. The police is acting like an animal when it's concerned the Palestinian protesters, even if they are peaceful one, and is acting like a good child when he's responding to Jewish protesters, even the Jewish vandalists. We are under attack every day since Monday night, and the police is only closing the entrance of Jaffa and making it as a ghetto once again. So this is the atmosphere. It's very intensive atmosphere, and the situation is not getting better since the night attacks a few days ago, even last night, Thursday. What is the situation when settlers are trying to come in? Well, the people stand outside of their houses and try to protect themselves, despite that the police is attacking everyone and wanting them to stay in their homes. So this is not a comfortable situation. It's a very bad situation and inconvenient situation. Jaffa's too close to Gaza. What do you notice from what is happening there? Jaffa and Gaza is one nation, one people, and it got one destiny. Both of cities are Palestinians.
Another Palestinian community inside the 48 lands is Lod. We spoke about Lod in a previous episode, the second episode of the trilogy From Jerusalem to Jaffa. Lod was a Palestinian town that was ethnically cleansed in 1948 and where only a small number of Palestinians remained. I spoke to Aya. She's a member of the board of directors at Zuchrot, That's an NGO that works to promote acknowledgement and accountability for the ongoing injustices of the Nakba, which is the Palestinian catastrophe of 1948, that is actually commemorated today on the 15th of May. Thanks to Margot for translating from Arabic to English.
مرحبا للكل. أنا آية زيناتي ناشطة سياسية ونسوية من اللد وبالثلاث سنوات الأخيرة ساكنة بحيفا.
Hello everyone, I'm Aya Zinati, a political and female activist from Lid. And for the last 3 years, I'm living in Haifa. In the past 2 weeks, the struggle of our brothers and sisters in Sheikh Jarrah has intensified due to the actions of Israel to forcefully expel and displace them from their homes. This becomes the second time they are forced to become refugees. These policies have been constant since the Nakba. In our cities and villages occupied in 1948, our people have decided to rise up and to revolt and to fight against the policies of Israel in relation to its occupation of Jerusalem and their seizure and control of Al-Aqsa Mosque. A week ago, demonstrations started erupting in several cities occupied in 1948. Amongst these cities was Lid. The demonstration was very intense. The youth revolted and expressed their strong felt anger to what was happening to their brothers and sisters in Jerusalem. During the demonstration, an Israeli settler pointed his gun and shot at the crowd of demonstrators, murdering a young man, Musa Hassouneh. As a result, the Lid residents refused what had happened. During his funeral, they were assaulted by Israeli forces who did not allow the funeral to continue in peace. Since then, there has been escalations to the situation in Lid. The original inhabitants of Lid are a small minority currently. The rest of the residents are either refugees from other surrounding villages or they have personally decided to reside in Lid. The percentage of Palestinian residents in Lid does not exceed 25% currently, when before 1948, the Palestinian population was approximately 99.86%. What happened in the last week is practically the unity of the Palestinian people, and it is a confirmation that we Palestinians in Lid, Yafa, Akka, and Haifa, we will continue the struggle. We see ourselves as part of our people in Gaza, part of our people in the West Bank, and part of our people in the territories occupied in 1948. Most people living in Gaza are refugees from Lid, Ramle, and Yafa. Most of the refugees in Balata refugee camp in Nablus are from Lid, Ramle, and Jaffa during the Nakba. We are one nation, we are one people. And what is happening now is that we as Palestinians are going through another Nakba, a continuous one, and ethnic cleansing. This is why the youth revolted to protect their homes, their families, their properties. We are witnessing attacks, we are witnessing aggression under the protection of the State of Israel, as well as the Israeli media and every official arm of the state. The state that has occupied us in 1948 and continues to occupy us in different creative ways is interested this explosion takes place under the guise of civil unrest. We are a people who demand our freedom. We are a people who demands the end of occupation. We are a people who demands the end of the massacres on Gaza. We are a people who demands the right of return to every refugee, and we refuse to give up that right. It is important to shed light to the fact that Akka and Haifa have witnessed the continuous efforts of Judaization in the last few years. Groups of settlers are invited to come and live in these cities for the sole purpose of Judaizing these cities and expelling the Palestinian inhabitants. This is a systematic effort by the State of Israel to rid its major cities of the original inhabitants and to settle Jews instead.
12 years ago, I met Nader in Amsterdam, a very nice Palestinian guy from the Gaza Strip. We always remained in touch on Facebook when I moved to live in Palestine, and I just realized that he is in Gaza now when I saw a Facebook post. I talked to him yesterday about what he experienced in the night from Thursday to Friday. He just came to visit his family for the first time after 11 years to celebrate the end of Ramadan.
Hi, Chris. How are you? I don't know where to start, actually. The first 2 days when I arrived here, it was very quiet, and the scenario of having a war was so far from even like thinking about it. And then the moment I arrived here to Gaza after 11 years, things has changed rapidly, like very quickly. The situation, I don't know what happened in Jerusalem. It started in Jerusalem, and then Gaza started to answer to what happened in Jerusalem. Yeah, and then look where we are now. Yesterday was the hardest night in my entire life. I have been here in Gaza in 2008, 2009, but that war as a whole, 22 days in December 2008 until January 2009, the whole period of that war was like, you cannot compare it to just like what happened to us yesterday. It was such a very, very heavy and aggressive shelling and bombing all over Gaza. And the sound was very loud, like explosions, very hard. Like, oh my God, it's so fucking hard to describe. I thought we gonna die. Like, my family were screaming. My sister lived also at the border. And they were running in the middle of the night. She was screaming from how scared they were. She has 8 children. And then they came at 3 a.m. in the night. They were running from about 3 kilometers from where they came. And yeah, now she's with us because I live in the middle of the city, of Gaza City. So it's kind of a bit far from the border. Yeah, I really hope this gonna stop soon because we cannot handle. It was like really hard to see my family, like so scared. I couldn't do anything for them. I was scared myself. Like I was really like, I was trying to keep myself like strong, but it was really hard. Like the whole thing, like it was an earthquake in our house. Like the house, the windows were opening very hard. I really hope this gonna stop very soon. I came expecting to spend the end of Ramadan with my family, and look where we are now. We cannot leave home. I don't move from out. I just like go down and I see my cousins, my family, but to go out and to see my friends, which I didn't see for 11 years. Imagine now I'm in Gaza and I am unable to see my best friends where they live just 800 meters far from me. I'm in Gaza now and I cannot see my friends. My best friend, I cannot see him because of the situation. It's really hard, Chris. I cannot describe it. Like, I have no words. I have no words. But I really, like, want the world to know what's happening here. This is really hard. After 11 years, I come to a war again. I left in 2009 after the war. And now I came back after 11 years, and now I'm experiencing the same thing. But harder, more aggressive.
My teacher, Yusuf Ghouri, is from Gaza. He's a Christian Palestinian. He taught us about the Palestinian theology regarding how to understand the Old and New Testament of the Bible in the context of the place where we live. And I asked him about his family in Gaza.
Let me share a little bit about what's happening in Gaza, especially I have family there. My parents and youngest sister, my oldest sister and her husband and their kids live in Gaza, particularly in Rimal, which is at the heart of Gaza City, where most of the high buildings that you see on TV are being bombarded by the Israeli Air Force for the last 2 days or 3 days. My family, my whole family couldn't sleep because they were terrified, traumatized by all the bombing that happens around them. In fact, they are afraid of falling asleep for being or just missing a call from the Israeli army asking them to evacuate or just for the sake of anything's happened near them. So they would be awake to leave. In addition to that, they keep their important papers and their money in a small bag near them all the time. Also worried that they have to evacuate or if, God forbidden, a house being bombarded, that they can find their important stuff easily. On the streets, they see people leaving whole neighborhoods and walking to safer parts of Gaza. But in fact, there is no safe place in Gaza. Just a few minutes ago, a bank near the central hospital in Gaza was completely destroyed by the Israeli airstrikes, leveled to the ground. I have friends in Gaza. Their houses were directly affected by that airstrike in particular. Many Palestinian Christians and Muslims lost their houses. Now they are homeless, lost their business, lost their loved ones. But I think beyond all of that also is the experience of the war that children of Gaza and people of Gaza are experiencing in each and every second and minute of those days. It's beyond traumatization. It's a genocide. It's a crime against humanity that Israel has to be held accountable for. The Gaza Strip is a small region or a small area in the Palestinian territory. It's only 365 square kilometers with the highest density in the world with 2.2 million people. So imagine all those airstrikes and the Israeli army is preparing to invade Gaza. How many people would be killed? How many people would be injured because of that? When people ask me or say that it's because of Hamas or it's because the Palestinians fired first, my question always is, why you blame the victim, not the oppressor? Why you blame the occupied, not the occupier? The people of Gaza has been living in a blockade made by the Israelis for the last 15 years. After practicing their democratic right of voting for Hamas. And now the Palestinians are blamed for that choice. Not only blamed, but also being punished for it. The Palestinian people in Gaza, the Palestinian people in general, deserve life and a life with dignity, deserve life without occupation, life of freedom and liberation. And as a Christian Palestinian, I believe that the Bible teaches me so, that God stands for justice. God stands and hears the cries of the people who suffer of the oppression and any kind of injustice around the globe. That's my faith. That's what I believe. And I believe that there is hope. There is place for us in the future to experience prosperity and freedom. What I hope for is that my family and all the people of Gaza, my nephews and nieces, will wake up tomorrow for a better day and a better future, where there is electricity 24/7, where there is clean water to drink, where there is safe playgrounds for them to go, a beach to swim without worrying about Israeli airstrikes, Israeli blockade, Israeli invasions. Israeli army might be able to kill people of Gaza and people of Palestine and imprison them, but will not ever be able to take or kill our dream for freedom and liberation, for a better future, full of dignity and prosperity.
Thank you for listening. I'm not sure about next week if I will be able to make another episode. It'll depend on the situation, so keep an eye on the Facebook page and Instagram. The links are in the show notes. You can also sign up for the email list, follow the same link, or go to storiesfrompalestine.info. If you are wondering what you can do, then here are a few suggestions. Reach out to every Palestinian you know and send them messages of solidarity. Check in with them, check how they're doing, and offer your support. Write to your media outlets about things that they are not reporting or that they are not reporting correctly. Follow reliable media outlets to understand what is happening on the ground. I will post some links in the show notes. Share that information on your own social media. Share it with friends and family. Write to your members of parliament. Write to your local leaders, urge them to take a stand and to put pressure on Israel and stop financing companies that benefit from the occupation of Palestine. Put your money where your heart is. See if you can support a Palestinian NGO. See if you can support Palestinian online businesses by ordering from them. If there are any protests in your country, you can join them. If you don't like to be out in protests, you can still make a statement. Put a poster in your window, put up a flag, put up stickers, make a statement. Just don't think that it doesn't matter. Don't think that it won't make a difference. Doing nothing will definitely not make a difference. So don't look away in the face of injustice. Get out of your comfort zone. It's still better there than in Gaza Strip. The mood among Palestinians is one of unity. Unity that we haven't seen in Palestine for a very long time. Unity among Palestinians and international solidarity. That is the way to go towards justice and peace.